Is it a Sunday? Not morning. It is Sunday afternoon. And we're going to welcome in the bench coach of the San Francisco Giants. And that's Ron Wotus. Well, how are you?
I'm good, Marty. Good afternoon to you. And I have one question. Am I eligible for the Hawaiian Airlines drawing?
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
Sure, why not?
Absolutely. We'll bring the entry form over to you. And wouldn't that be something if he won? Rick Bellison won one time.
I know. Now, Ron Wotus looks like he'd get up on a surfboard and hang 10.
Well, I've tried it a couple times. You know, our AAA team was in Hawaii. You spent a lot of time there. I love Hawaii, but I won't enter. I'll let somebody else do it, get on that surfboard, because it's a lot of fun.
All right. Hey, of course, it is coming up to the dog days of August, and it almost feels like it is now. But this has been some race back and forth, back and forth. Explain how this works as a baseball man. You know, you win one, you lose one, and here we are. It's July 27th, and you're still sitting in there.
Well, you know, it's the old cliche. You just take it one day at a time. You know, we're neck and neck with them. There's a lot of baseball to be played. This game is important to us today. It's a two-game swing. If we can win this game, put us back in first place. You want to avoid the sweep, and because, you know, at the end of the year, every game counts. So regardless of what happens today, there's a lot of games left, and you just keep pushing forward. This is the time of year that you love. I mean, as a competitor, as a coach, these games become more and more important, and this is what we live for.
Boy, what about Jake Peavy? Now, you saw him when he was a Padre, of course, and he was pretty tough within the National League West. He's here today.
Yeah.
He's going to get the ball today. How about that for the drama and romance of baseball?
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, the timing is perfect. We certainly need a lift, and Jake can provide that. Obviously, we know him real well. Boach knows him. Flan knows him. We saw him in this division for years, fierce competitor, and the timing could not be better.
Well, to give us a little scouting report on Peavy. He looks a little bit like Hudson to me. You know, he's from Mobile, Alabama. He wore number 44. He cannot do that here. He understands that. The great Willie McCovey's got
right.
That one. He'll take 43. But what kind of a guy is he, especially on the mound?
Well, you know, he's the similarities continue. I mean, he's a great competitor. I think when he pitched against us in the past, he's a fiery guy. He's a sinker baller. I mean, that's his number one pitch, like Hudson. You know, sinker, slider, changeup. He comes at you. He pounds the strike zone, tries to keep the ball down. But, you know, the thing that really stands out is his competitiveness. You know, he yells at himself. He gets fired
really?
Up. Oh, yeah, yeah. He's he gives it everything he has. He's a max effort guy. And, you know, talking to the people that watched him and know him very well, he's going to give you everything that he has, and that attitude is contagious, and that's a great attitude to have.
Now, let me be clear. Mark Fidrich used to talk to the baseball, you know, on the mound and pat it down. Is PV on national television going to start yelling?
Well, I think he does it a little differently. You know, I mean, you'll see him yell and scream and, you know, get upset with himself. I mean, from the other side, you know, what he's exactly saying, I don't know. But, you know, when you're on the other side watching him pitch, you see him with the antics and getting on himself if things aren't going the way he wants or he makes a big pitch. He'll let it out.
I think we saw quite a bit of that in the playoffs last year when he was a Red Sox. We saw him getting pretty animated. Does that fire up his teammates, and can that fire up the opponents? Or is that just in his own little bubble?
Yeah, I think that's his way. You know, when you're on the other side watching him, you know, you can take it the wrong way. But, you know, from what I understand, and you know, it's directed at himself. It's not directed at the other team. He's not trying to show up anybody. It's his way of motivating himself and pitching, and he's very good at it.
Well, in this series, you just have to blink, and you're going to show up the other team.
Right.
Something's a bat flick. Something is always cooked. Isn't it amazing?
Well, it's out of hand, really. I mean, come on. Let's play the game of baseball, respect the game, play it right, and let the game be decided by the performance of the players, not by all these other antics.
All right, Ron Wotus with us. Of course, it is not Sunday morning, so don't reset your clocks. It's okay. It's Sunday afternoon. We've got Giants and Dodgers coming up today. The professor is here. Now, Pat, you know that on Sunday morning.
Absolutely.
We have people in the clubhouse that listen all the time to the professor,
yep.
Ron Wotus. We have the philosopher, who is Tim Flannery, who keeps everything straight for us, and the pupil, Javier Lopez, and he's the one who takes the notes on this thing. But in the Miami series, and I thought of you, and I always think of things during the game, and I said, boy, I got to ask Woe about this. The Marlins ran the bases rather oddly, I thought, getting thrown out at third a couple of times on ground balls to short that didn't go through, and then Stanton took off at third, again with two out, ending an inning, and Posey made a great throw. I think it was Posey or Sanchez, I forget, made a great throw down there and got him. So take us through this issue of you're on second base. It's a ground ball to short. It's a backhand side, or maybe it's even behind you, wherever it is. How do you teach this thing? Because it benefited the Giants by their running.
Yeah, well, you see a lot of mistakes or errors in judgment with a runner on second base and the ball's hit to short or third. You know, that's the play that you work on a lot. Everybody does at every level, trying to read the ball. I mean, if you're the shortstop, if you're the runner at second and you're the shortstop, the ball's hit to the shortstop's left. That's a ball, excuse me, that you can advance on.
Right.
You know, now if it's hit to his right, you typically don't advance on that ball unless you think it's getting through. And I think in that case in Miami, the runner may have thought the ball was going to go between short and third, tried to go to third base, and in that instance, really the shortstop's easiest play is the third base. He backhands the ball instead of throwing to first, he can throw to third. So that's what happened there a couple times. That play comes up quite often, and that's a play that, like I said, everybody works on. Your reads at second base because there's balls on the ground to the shortstop, third baseman. If it's tapped slowly to the third baseman, you can go to third. So you have to read the ball, and then the ball in the outfield is a whole other situation. So it takes a lot of reputation and baseball instincts to execute it properly.
Well, you know, it made me think about it. Well, we appreciate you being here this morning. I always thought the ball's got to go through. That's the way I was taught, you know, whenever we played. The ball's got to go through. So as a professional, do you have to sort of judge it going through, or do you say, I want to see the white of the ball going through that shortstop before I take off? Because you do want to get a good jump to score.
Right.
So how do you break that down?
No, you're exactly right. The rule of thumb is, you know, the ball hit to the right side, or excuse me, to the right of the shortstop or to the third baseman or the shortstop. The ball needs to go through before you try to advance.
Right,
that's the rule of thumb.
You?
Yes, you want to see the ball. But, you know, the ball's hit slowly, there's some balls you can advance on, you know, typically to the third baseman. But you're exactly right. Anytime the ball's hit to the shortstop, unless it's hit to his left going towards second base, you want to hold your ground until you see it through. So you're exactly right on that, Mark.
Yeah, that's what I always was taught. Let me see the ball go through, because these guys have such tremendous range.
Right.
They can stop a ball like that, and it's a great play for a shortstop.
Right. That's a good rule of thumb, and that's the way it should be taught. Yeah.
All right. Ron Woda is with us. All right. How about, I thought of this last night, and bringing the infield in. It's always a tough decision early in a game to bring an infield in, because you do the shifts. You know, you all know all the computer stuff that's going on. You bring an infield in, and the chance of getting a hit is dramatically raised.
Right.
But what do you tell an infielder? Just come into the grass? How far do you bring people in, maybe halfway or to the grass?
Hey, right.
We saw that last night.
Well, the outs make a difference, obviously. If it's one out, typically the runner on third, if they have a leader, it's tie game or he has speed. If there's one out, the runner's going to go on contact,
okay.
Meaning if the ball, as soon as the ball's put on the ground, he's going to try to score. Now, in that scenario, you want to be all the way up on the grass, because if the guy has any speed at all, you got to make a perfect throw. The catcher's got to tag him, and we know how the tags are now, a little bit different. So you want to be all the way up. Now, with nobody out, you can be a little bit deeper, because typically if a man's on third and there's nobody out, the third base coach is going to say, make the ball go through.
Got it.
Okay?
Yeah.
Because you got another crack at scoring the run. Even
got
if
it.
that hitter hits a ground ball and you don't go, it's one out now. Now you can send the runner. You can score the run without a base hit. So no outs. You usually hold. One out, you're typically going to go on contact.
We always learn. I always learned something. I didn't realize that.
Well,
I didn't realize, because I always say bring the infield in. I'm never sure exactly where they're going to go. And now it makes a lot of sense.
Well, you know what? It changes quite a bit. Look, the speed of the runner at third can dictate a lot. It also changes with the number of runs on the board. You know, that scoreboard tells you everything. So if you're late in the game and you're losing by two or three runs and you have one out with a man on third, they're not going to send him on contact, because there's, you know, a 50-50 chance that he's going to make it. So you're going to wait for the hit so you can play your infield a little bit deeper in that scenario, especially if the runner is not a fast runner. You're not going to send him on contact. You're going to tell him there, even the one out, hey, let's make sure the ball goes through before you score.
Yeah, boy, great, Pat. You know,
very educational.
Honestly,
hey, hence the professor.
This is why he's the professor. And all right, we had a play come up the other day, and Ron Wotus with us, and fans, I'm always glad to have Woe here with us every Sunday.
We
got
to get him to sign our table, by the way.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Don't forget. Do we have a Sharpie around?
Oh, darn tootin', we do.
Yeah, no, thank you. For Heritage Salvage.
Right up.
Very
Bugs, listen.
Good work, Pat. Good work. Yeah, we got to get him to sign the table. we had a play the other day where Bumgarner sort of didn't back up a throw that came in from the outfield. And it made me think, I said to myself, you know, here's a play. And I always say, well, the pitcher's got to, how's the pitcher doing? Well, he's backing up third a lot. You know, he's not doing that well. Then I said to myself, just like a typical throw from the outfield, what's the pitcher's responsibility in that? And it's not the throw coming to third or throw coming to the plate, just general responsibility.
Yeah. Well, throw coming to the plate, I mean, usually there's a man on first, the ball was hit in a gap, or a man was on second, and the ball's hit into the outfield. Well, the pitcher backs up. Where the play is going to be. Okay. So there's a man on second, base hit, he's going to back up home. You know, so the batter runner, if it's a bad throw or it kicks away, the pitcher is there. Probably where it gets a little bit different is with a man on first, ball hit in the gap, the pitcher is going to go. The play is either going to be at third, right? It's a sure double, it's in the gap, or a possible triple. The pitcher is either going to back up third or home. So he'll come over between third and home, read the play, see where the play is going to go, and then move to back up that base. It might be third, it might be home. So that's a little more of a judgment call on his part. You have to read it. But the key is backing up somewhere. Anytime the ball's hit on the field, whether it's a pitcher or an infielder, everybody has a place to go. Don't get caught spectating. Go to your spot, and that's the way you want to play.
What happened with Bumgarner then? Because he sort of wasn't in the right position, it looked like.
I don't remember the particular play, but look, what happens. I mean, guys sometimes don't back up. Their thoughts are elsewhere. Yeah. They get distracted. They end up watching the play, and who knows? You know, they give up a big hit and they're upset about that. But, it happens quite a bit. Every day you see it. But that's the way you want to do it. You want to go to your spot.
All right. Dan Ugla is going to join us at some point today. We're going to hopefully have him here or maybe on the phone. What do you think of him defensively? I mean, he's been an all-star. They always said, well, his glove and all this kind of stuff. You've gotten to work with Ugla a couple of days. What do you see with him?
Well, I remember him for all the years that he was in Miami when he first came up. I think he was a Rule 5 guy?
Yes, he was a chip on the shoulder kind of guy.
Yes, he was.
He's always got something to show you.
Always had a good bat, and they said, well, his defense was suspect, and he worked down there with Perry Hill, who was the infield coach, who, matter of fact, I spoke to in Miami before we acquired him. We talked about Dan Ugla quite a bit, and I asked him about how he's doing, and et cetera, his defense, and a few things, because he had him. He was the one that had him as a young player. And, the thing that impressed me about Dan all those years I watched him is, they said he wasn't a great defender, but, he always made the plays. And he's a better defender than people give him credit for. And having him out there the last 2 days, already I can see he knows the league. He knows the hitters. He's been through this. He knows how to position. He knows how to play the game. So it's just a matter of executing the play. And last night he made a couple great diving stops.
Yeah, D. Gordon got him. He was pulled up.
He got D. Gordon at first.
Yeah. Yep.
Diving to his left.
Yep. He's got good first step quickness. He's ready to go, and he's a good acquisition for us. We hope he gets that bat going because he can make a real impact for us.
Well, 42,000 will be here today. It'll be the 302nd consecutive sellout, and Russ Stanley, of course, clicking his heels, and everybody else very excited about that in the financial department. Let's put it that way, the Giants. But it's interesting how other teams react to the 42,000. Two ways. One, of course, when you're 6-18 at home and you're not scoring more than 3 runs a game, the crowd gets rather quiet. But when you're out here as an opponent with 42,000, sometimes I think the opponents actually feed off that a little bit and maybe raise their game. Is that possible?
Absolutely.
Really?
There's no question about it. I mean, when you go into a ballpark and it's a packed house, there's a lot more energy, even when you're on the road. And, these guys, you want to perform. And it's much easier to take a mental break or not go hard when the ballpark is empty because, they feel like there's nobody there watching. Not that you're planning that, but that's the atmosphere. I mean, this is, you come into our ballpark, it's a playoff atmosphere every game. The crowd is electric, and they do impact the players and their desire to play.
What about Andrew Susak last night? He makes his debut against Clayton Kershaw. Did you give him any words to calm him down before he went out there, or did you just, hey, man, we got to throw you out there to the Sharks, baby?
Yeah, well, no, I didn't say anything to him. Just let him go out there. He's been playing baseball long enough, and it's a great moment for him and his family. I know his folks were here. He's, from Sacramento up the way, and what a great first big league game. You never forget it.
Yep.
But here to be here at home in San Francisco, you could have got called up on the road.
Sure.
Playing the Dodgers in this team in a first-pace club.
Against
a great
Clayton
moment
Kershaw.
For him. Great moment. Yeah, exactly. And you got Kershaw on the mound. So a great moment for him.
So here's his comment. He says, well, I got up to the plate and Kershaw was smiling at me.
Yep.
I thought I was going to get a cookie and he's just going to lay one into me. And, of course, he got a fastball, a cutter riding in his hands and they hit it to third. But he swung at that first pitch.
Yeah, well, he was ready to hit. He wasn't going to get cheated. I mean, he's been wanting to get here, right? He's been playing hard down there and wanting to get to the big leagues. You get that moment. It's nice to see that he's aggressive and not being passive when he gets his opportunity.
Good. Boy, amazing. All right, we'll let you go. I know you got a lot of work to do in getting this lineup together today against Ray Yu. A little bit about Ray Yu. Well, you know, the Giants have actually hit him a little bit.
Yeah.
Different than Greinke and Kershaw. Looking at the numbers, they've actually gotten to him a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, he's tough, though. He's a good pitcher. He's a quality pitcher. He keeps the ball down. You know, pitches away mostly. He comes inside a little bit. He doesn't have the stuff as of the Greinke or Kershaw's caliber, obviously, but knows how to pitch, has pretty good command, and when he's on, he's tough. He keeps the ball down and away and keeps the ball out of the middle of the plate.
Well, Hall of Fame day is today, did you see any of it this morning?
I listened to some of it coming in, and boy, you know, the older you get, the more you love listening to the Hall of Fame inductions, and I got to hear a little Tony La Russa, just the end of Bobby Cox, and the Big Hurt was just on, Frank Thomas, and it's great to listen to.
Isn't it?
Yes.
I love it. I just want to ask you, you've really managed, you and Bruce have managed, and Dusty and Felipe, you've managed against Joe Torre,
right.
Bobby Cox, Tony La Russa. What do you think of those guys as a challenge as a manager? And I remember Art Howe, I used to talk to Art Howe about this, and whenever he went against Socha, he loved to manage against Socha because Socha had people in motion all the time.
Right.
You never knew what he was going to do, and it was a real challenge with pitch outs. What about against those three guys?
Well, the two that stand out, we spent more time locking horns against are Bobby Cox and Tony La Russa. I mean, we had to go through Atlanta twice in the playoffs ago we were going. We had to go through St. Louis a couple times. So we've had a lot of battles with them. And, you know, Bobby, I never worked alongside of him, but, you know, he was always on top of the game. You know, he was an aggressive manager. That stands out, yes. I mean, when you have a chance to steal a base, you have a little advantage with the pitcher's release. He was going to do it. There was no waiting around. You know, two outs, he got a base stealer on first base. He's not going to wait two or three pitches. He's going to send them right away.
Okay.
And being around Willie Upshaw was one of our coaches here for years. He played for Bobby.
Yeah.
And I remember him telling me all the time about Bobby. And you know, he was a man's man in the way they managed the game and managed people. And he really was a great guy to play for. Players loved playing for him. But Willie tells a story that, you know, a couple guys in the club, when they wouldn't hustle on the team, this is back when they were in Toronto, he would pull a guy aside and say, hey, look, you don't want to play? Go in the clubhouse, take your uniform off and go home right now. Just go home. Take the uniform off and go home if you don't want to play. And that's the type of guy he was. Now, Tony, on the other hand, I think a little more cerebral approach, nonetheless, any less of a competitor. Both these guys love to compete. But Tony, you know, impacted the game, I think, more with some of the things he did. I mean, hitting the pitcher eighth, you know, more cerebral, more gamesmanship in his managing. Whenever we played them, you were always aware of Tony and what he was trying to do. I think there's one year that he led the league in squeeze bunts. You know, so a guy got on third, when's he going to squeeze? That was a big thing that he had going at one point in time. And, you know, hitting and running, he always tried to nudge game and impact the game with his knowledge. And that's really what stands out a little bit about Tony.
Right, great scouting report on both of them. For me, La Russa, it was first and second in a bunting situation. He was going to do a double steal.
Right.
You had to be ready for that. And he wasn't afraid to do anything.
Well, that's true. It's legendary to how well he was always prepared.
Yeah.
And that preparation allowed him to take chances in these moments and do things. Yeah. And you're exactly right. So you had to be on your toes. And I think Bobby was a great manager, but he was more old school. Yeah. Support his players, put them in the right situation, and let them play. But Tony did impact the game. I think one thing St. Louis does right now that he started is, I think he was one of the first managers to have the steal sign come from the bench.
Yeah.
Most third base coaches give the steal sign. Well, not Tony. He was the first one. He'd have his trainer or another player on the bench give the sign. So if you watch the Cardinals today, they still do it.
Really?
The guys get on first base, they glance into the dugout every pitch, and there's usually a guy there, whether he's standing up, folding his arms, has a book open, whatever it is, that's the steal sign. So Tony was always had those gamesmanships going so people couldn't steal his signs and was always trying to find an edge in some part of the game.
Great, great. Well, he's the best.
Awesome.
He's the best. All right, Ron, you're the best.
Then, Harold Reynolds told a good one on Tony this morning. He said he'd see him before a game. How you doing today, Tony? Ask me in nine innings.
Yeah, no, right. 3 hours is what he used to tell me.
Very competitive.
No, yeah, he's notorious.
But he's a lawyer.
Yeah.
He's a lawyer. I hate to say that, but he is a lawyer.
You know how that is, Marty. You got to be prepared.
I got my book. You know that.
No stone unturned.
Very competitive. You got to see him coming out here doing one-arm push-ups before the show.
And the other thing, Bobby Cox always wears spikes. And he would come out here at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock and sit around and talk. I loved talking with him. And he was in full uniform. As Tim Hudson said, he had his nails on.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Do you wear spikes?
No. Well, shoot, I'm bench coaching. You know, if you go out on the lines, I know Flan wears them at third base.
Oh, he does. Okay.
Yeah, but there's no need for me. I might trip and fall on the dugout stairs if I wear them. But if you're out on the grass and it's wet, you know, I know Flan wears them because you're moving quick. You have to wave a guy. It could be raining. You don't want to fall down. You know, you want to stay on your feet, especially as a coach. So.
All right. Okay. We'll end on that one. Very good. Well, thanks so much, as always.
My pleasure, Marty.
Fans, let's hear for Ron Wotus here.
Very good.
Bench coach of the Giants, and nice enough to come out. I appreciate it. Have a good night tonight.
Thanks, Ron.
Thanks, Marty. Good seeing you guys.
That is Ron Wotus. Always a pleasure. Boy, Sunday is just absolutely. Oh, we got to have you sign the
Caleb,
table.
Caleb, don't let him get out of here without signing the table.
We got to have you sign the table for Heritage anywhere you want. Just sign the name Marty Lurie. I mean, Ron Wotus, that's all. All right, more coming up right here on the Sports Leader.